Good morning on Wednesday, March 19th, 2014. You're listening to a special edition of the BrianMadden.com podcast. This is Brian Madden coming from San Francisco. Got two people connecting to us via Skype. As always, we have Gabe Knuth in Omaha. Good morning.
Hello.
And we also have Peter Smith. Peter Smith is joining us from New York City. Hello, Peter.
Hello. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks. Peter's the Director of Product Management for Infinio Systems. And so today is one of our special edition podcasts, which is sponsored by Infinio. And the idea is we're going to talk about with Peter about Infinio Systems and VDI and storage and performance and all of that sort of stuff. And like our other special edition podcasts, we want to really dig into the technology and how it works and what it does. And I'm coming to this podcast not knowing much about Infinio. In fact, the website for Infinio says downloadable storage performance. and I don't know what that is or how it works, but I mean, I want that,
that's
right?
That's a good place to start.
What the hell is that? And also, can I have that, please?
Absolutely, you can. Yes. So downloadable storage performance, it really just highlights the fact that Infinio is a software-only server-side cache. We work with VMware 4.1 and 5.x. Our most recent release supports 5.5. And we'll work with NFS-based data stores. The reason we say that it's downloadable storage performance is because as a software-only approach, we don't require any hardware, no SSDs, nothing like that. It doesn't require any reboots of your VMs or ESX hosts. There's no pollution of your environment with stuff like, you know, OS plugins and whatnot. And there's no manual administration. So it's 100% downloadable software, no hardware, fully automated installation, no changes to your administrative practices.
Okay, so I'm thinking about how this works. So you've got a vSphere and ESX host, bunch of VMs on it. You've got NFS storage, which I'm assuming you're not touching that. It's any NF storage, and you're sitting in between. Are you like a virtual machine in there, or like how do you sit in this chain between your VMs and the NFS?
Yep. Yeah. So the beauty of the solution is that it works with your existing data stores. You spent time configuring your storage system, getting the shares set up, ACLs, all of that stuff. You've got your data stores online and you've got data within them. The last thing you want to do is to have to provision new virtual data stores or something like that, have to migrate content and all of the hassles associated with that. So what Infinio does is we're actually able to inspect NFS traffic while it's within the ESX host and optimize it. And the way we do that is really by intercepting traffic at the vSwitch layer. All of the storage acceleration solutions have some method of accessing storage I/O. Some of them do it through virtual data stores or through certain private APIs in the VMware stack. But on the NFS side, there really isn't any sort of programmatic way of accessing that stack. So what we do is we can actually inspect the NFS traffic while it's on the vSwitch in the ESX host and optimize it in real time.
So can you talk a little bit about like what optimization you're actually doing? Is this purely, are you caching stuff in RAM to be served faster? Are you doing like single instance block or deduplication or, you know?
Yeah, sure. So what we do, what our caching technology does, is it actually pools memory and CPU to form a distributed cache that spans your entire ESX cluster. So the Infinio cache is content-based. It's globally deduplicated to offload more requests from your storage, and the deduplication reduces the resource requirements. So to put a finer point on that, what it allows us to do is store one copy of content and share that content across the entire cluster to boost VDI performance. And you know, as you pointed out, deduplication technologies, there's a lot of nuances there. Our deduplication technology is at the 4K granularity, and that's one copy of each 4K page stored once throughout the entire cluster, and every cluster member is able to identify the location of a 4K page within the cluster so it can fetch it there instead of having to go to storage. And as a result, you can imagine it, you know, increases VDI performance, lowers the cost of storage, For that matter, you could take an old array and have it perform like a new array, just with software that you download from the internet. It's pretty crazy.
Because really, NFS at that point is almost like, that's like your cold storage. I mean, that's a glacier. Like, you don't care about that almost.
That's a great way of putting it. Yep.
So, and I imagine, so you're talking about this thing is global across your whole cluster. So you mean like multiple ESX hosts? Is this actually running as a virtual machine? It's a virtual appliance. It's on each ESX host.
Yeah. So the way it actually works in your environment is there's one virtual machine per ESX host in your cluster, as well as a management virtual machine. And what we do is we reserve 8 gigs of physical memory for that accelerator appliance and one vCPU. We assign it 2, but we reserve 1. And our software stitches us into that I/O path through the vSwitch interface. And as we see traffic, we do real-time indexing of it, real-time deduplication of it, and we, in real-time, distribute the content throughout the cluster. And our scheme for the deduplication makes it so that every node in the cluster is aware of the location of all of the content. So if there's ever a piece of content, let's say you've got content A that's accessed by a virtual machine on host 1. Now, a virtual machine on host 5 also accesses content A. Now, rather than making a second request to storage, why not instead just go to host 1 where content A was originally accessed and fetch it there? And that furthers the offload from the backend storage. So the real point I'm trying to make here is that as opposed to having silos of cache on a per host basis where that cache is local to the VMs that are on that host, instead what we do is we say, you know what, the cache should be a global pool, and that global pool should be visible to every single virtual machine within the cluster so that any VM, independent of its location, can access any cache content independent of the location of the cache content.
And then, of course, if one of these hosts goes down, will you still have the NFS to sort of fall back on to? So if it needs to rebuild that cache for the blocks that are these 4K chunks, whatever, that are gone, then, you know, and a host goes down, then it can sort of, you know, there's no data loss there.
Yeah, so data loss from a cache perspective, what you would lose is 1/n of the cache. So if you've got a 5-node cluster and you lose one of those nodes, you've lost 20% of content, but it's not 20% of all of the content for those VMs, because keep in mind, the content for those VMs is actually load balanced across the cluster. So you're only losing sort of bits and pieces of cacheable content, and that quickly rebuilds in the remaining cache nodes.
And it's interesting, and like worst case, so like as you're talking, I almost want to say, oh, but what's this going to do to your network? But then on the other hand, I bet 10 gig Ethernet cards are a hell of a lot cheaper than SANs.
Yeah, well, that is definitely true. Also, sort of the way we go about this is, you know, we're sort of considerate of the architecture that the administrators have built here. And we say, listen, you've got latent resources throughout your environment, one of which is your vMotion network. Even in the case of a 1 gig environment, most 1 gig environments, if they're doing a 6 NIC or an 8 NIC deployment, they've got at least one dedicated 1 gig Ethernet connection for vMotion. So what we do is we identify the network that's used for vMotion, and we piggyback that network for our peer-to-peer content. And the reason that's important is because for the peer-to-peer operations, it's riding on a network that, unless there's an active vMotion, really is just sitting there idle. And of course, there's also the case of 10 gig networking, where you just have an abundance of resources, and really our low overhead peer-to-peer really doesn't have any meaningful impact.
And that actually, since you're piggybacking on the vMotion network, I mean, it's already a fast network, and that's how you can that's how you can call this downloadable storage optimization then, right? I mean, because that conveys that it's quick to get up and running.
Yep. In fact, as far as getting up and running, there are just two points I'd like to make, which is on the vMotion network, there's another reason for choosing the vMotion network, because we're security conscious. We need to identify a network for peer-to-peer traffic that has similar traffic of a similar security risk. And when you look at what vMotion traffic represents, it's the memory state of your virtual machines, which is well aligned with storage I/O. You probably consider the memory state of a virtual machine and the storage that's being accessed by those virtual machines to be within the same realm from a security perspective. So rather than running peer-to-peer traffic over a guest VM, which could be public-facing or otherwise, we choose a network that has a similar security posture as your storage network. As far as the simplicity of installation and whatnot, we've invested tremendously in the installation process. To the extent that the full install, you download a 40-megabyte installer, and 100% of the installation process is automated. You click the next button 6 times. The happy path takes you straight through to accelerating your first data store. You don't have to so much as point us at a vSwitch. All you do is tell us what data store you want accelerated, and we take care of all of the details. And putting one more point on that, you would think that a distributed network-based solution would require all sorts of network-level changes. The reality is that our solution requires one IP address. You give one IP address to the management console, and all of the rest of the system fully automatedly configures itself. It uses link local, non-routable IP space spanning your vMotion network and storage network, so it can self-discover its peers and automatically start transferring peer-to-peer content without you having to make a single network change.
So you and I have talked before. We talked last November, and so since Brian hasn't spoken with you guys, we'll kind of treat this like an introductory thing. But I just want to let you know that was my key takeaway from the call that we had several months ago, was that the installation for this is automated and super quick. I think we even spoke about just being able to do it over lunch, I think, was...
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point, because it's like, you know, you can go, procure SSDs, take a trip down to the colo, install it, get the software up and running for competitive solutions. In many of the cases, you need to provision second data stores and migrate your data. These are projects. The cost necessitates approval all the way up from the CIO, sometimes up to the CFO. The solution that Infinio delivers, it's really about being able to solve a problem over your lunch break, being able to get access to software, install software, and solve a performance problem without the financial burden, without the project burden that, quite frankly, most infrastructure teams just can't take on. It's too much time, too much money.
Do people do that in production, or are they still doing it in labs? I mean, as an IT guy, I would want to do that in a lab first, but it sounds like the way this works, that it doesn't really interfere with anything.
What people typically do, just to gain a little familiarity and confidence in the software, is they'll isolate one of their production hosts with an NFS data store, perhaps leave one or two virtual machines running on it just to see the impact. Install our software, and what they soon realize is that we can actually slip into an active I/O stream. It could be 10,000 IOPS. It really doesn't matter. We can slip in without so much as a blip to that workload. So they gain this sort of confidence in the way we do our install and the non-disruptive nature of it. And you would be surprised. A lot of people just turn around and put it right into production. And like I said, they can do that because there's zero disruption to their workload. It doesn't so much as hiccup. If you want to quantify what that interruption feels like, it's analogous to a vMotion. Most people would not consider a vMotion to be disruptive. Now, naturally, there is some like half millisecond blip. Maybe occasionally you would lose a ping with a vMotion, but most organizations don't consider that to be a disruptive operation. Infinio is exactly like that. If you consider a vMotion to be disruptive, well, perhaps you could find a nuanced argument that says that Infinio is disruptive, but the reality is most people consider that to be an online production-worthy operation.
Yeah, because I guess if you're just sort of in the vSwitch, when you appear, you're just, traffic like NFS, you know, traffic is going your way. When you disappear, it's just going back to where it came from in the first place.
Exactly. All we do, literally all we do is remap the route of traffic through us, and the packets flow through us. We inspect it and we optimize it.
So the desktop, the virtual machine still thinks it's talking to storage, and the storage still thinks it's talking to the desktop.
And at a very fundamental level, we're talking, they literally think they have a socket connection directly to storage, and storage literally thinks it has a socket connection directly to the VM kernel interface of your ESX host. But the reality is that Infinio is acting as a transparent proxy, and we're seeing the traffic pass through us, much like any router in your environment does. The difference is that our router is at the application layer to the extent that we can optimize the NFS protocol.
So can you talk a little bit more about when, like, if I want to install this thing? Okay, so, you know, I get how I can just drop it in and it's the six clicks to, you know, happiness over lunch. But my existing
can we use that? I mean, that should be in our
six clicks to happiness.
Six clicks to happiness during lunch. And my, but you know, if I don't have any sort of, let's just say I'm using, you know, the quote unquote out of the box storage, and it doesn't matter if it's whatever, it's some NFS thing, and I've got a bunch of VMs or VDI or whatever, and so my disk images are going to be sort of, you know, duplicated. Like I've got these 4K blocks that they're duplicated all over the place. So if I drop Infinio into an existing environment that has lots of duplicated blocks, as time goes on, does it start to reduce those, or is it just sort of like not touching the original blocks on NFS, and it's just using, you know, a 4K cache for multiple hosts, and the NFS doesn't, you're not deleting off the NFS, you know?
It's a common point of confusion when we sort of tell the story that the deduplication, what does that really mean? Is it the cache that's deduplicated? Is it the underlying storage? And part of the value of Infinio is that it's as easy to remove as it is to install. And to make that possible, you cannot modify the underlying format of data on disk. Infinio does not modify in any way, shape, or form the content on disk. We do not deduplicate it or otherwise. The deduplication is about driving efficiency into the cache pool so that we can take 60 gigs of memory and turn it into 250 gigs of memory. So we're effectively growing the effective cache size by using deduplication so that we can reduce the memory overhead of our solution. And in fact, it's worth pointing out, among VDI acceleration products, the majority require 32 to 16 gigs of memory. Our memory footprint is 8 gigs per host, and our deduplication technology is what enables us to do that. We can crunch it down globally, not siloed per host, whereas most competitive solutions are about siloed caches, and they might optimize it with compression or otherwise, but the fact that you've got duplication across your hosts, as you add more hosts, you increase your duplication, which isn't the case with Infinio. Infinio deduplicates across the entire ESX cluster so that within your cluster, you only ever have one copy of content at a given time.
And so if we flip over to writes, we haven't talked about writes at all. Does this mean that if one VM writes a block that already exists in the cache, it's not going to be obviously written in the cache again, but is it actually written down to disk in a separate location so that if you remove the Infinio engine, then the blocks are all in the right places that they need to be?
The blocks are always written to disk in the right order, in the right location, with the right address applied. And that's actually what allows us to have a single-click removal. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the total cost of ownership of these solutions, oftentimes total cost of ownership doesn't take into account the removal of a solution or upgrades or otherwise. And our strategy of being able to simply slip in and out of an I/O path is what reduces that cost. So to that extent, what our product offers is one button. You click the button and it will deconstruct the entire Infinio solution in 5 minutes. So you went from having a fully deployed cache to Infinio leaving no trace in your environment with one button push in 5 minutes. And the question is, why would you want to do that? Well, for number one, so that you can evaluate the software without concern for pollution or corruption or dismantling your environment in any way. Number two is to facilitate simple upgrades. Number three is for disaster recovery scenarios, where, as we all know, there are times where your storage system acts up, and through the process of elimination, you identify where those constraints or where the problem exists. And one of those is to remove intermediate solutions. And a lot of concerns that customers have is about added complexity. So my question was, how do we eliminate the added complexity when it's necessary to do so? And that's why the single-click removal is so important. If you're troubleshooting your environment and you say, you know what, I need to start eliminating variables, click the remove button. 5 minutes later, you'll see that the problem was not Infinio, and you can move on with your investigation.
It's also interesting because it means that if you're working with multi-site for high availability or for DR, that you don't have to have Infinio on the secondary site, which I don't know 100% why that'd be the case, but I just feel like sometimes, you know, there's like backup sites that are different and that kind of stuff, and it's like you don't have to build, you know, like some of the solutions that are more specific, clearly whether it's proprietary hardware or whether it's, you know, something that stores all the blocks on disk in their own system instead of using like regular, you know, the original addresses of all the blocks.
It's a point we don't talk enough about with DR planning. The cost of extraneous licenses for a passive DR site. If you have a passive DR site for failover, Infinio has a licensing preference around not licensing your DR site because we are host-based licensing. It's concurrent use licensing. If you have five hosts in site A and five hosts in site B, you can actually migrate those licenses over to your other site in the event of a DR disaster event.
Oh, and I guess that's very easy, too, to be concurrent-based because all of your ESX hosts are sort of just nodes in your, you know, cache cluster or global cache or whatever you call it. So it's basically however many licenses you have, that's how many nodes you can have in your cluster.
Yep.
Is it licensed per node or per CPU?
Per socket.
Per socket.
Yep. So the licensing, before we move on to licensing, I'd like to just wrap up on the DR side because, you know, DR is a very complex subject. And particularly when we talk about passive DR, reconciling differences in configurations across your active and secondary site is problematic and is often the cause of DR failures when it's most needed. So your insurance policy is not effective if you don't have consistency, right? So the way Infinio aids you in that is, number one, by not requiring any network level changes, no firewalls, nothing like that. So our management console, for instance, when it talks to all of our accelerator appliances to issue accelerate, decelerate, get stats, all that stuff, it doesn't actually do it over the network. We use an out-of-band process which communicates all of this stuff via the vCenter server. So as long as our management console can talk to the vCenter server, we have full administrative control over our accelerators. There is no direct network connection between our management console and the accelerators. So you don't need to change firewall policies or anything like that. And that is part of what makes it so simple to deploy in both your primary and your secondary site. You don't have to consider, oh, did we match the policies? Do we need to make these adjustments globally or whatnot? It's just simplicity. That is the focus of our product.
So another thing kind of when you're talking about the ease of removal and ease of installation, I guess, is do you offer a demo, like an eval? And if so, can I make a suggestion that when your demo runs out, if it's like a 30-day eval, you should just make it remove itself for like an hour and then reinstall itself and be like, there, you like that? You like what we did to you and it's gone? Try it. You got 24 hours. Then you remove it for 2 hours and you're like, you like that? Did the CIO call?
You're suggesting ransomware.
Yeah.
That would be something. We do have a 30-day trial, And at the end of the 30 days, what the software does is it continues to accelerate. So I should point out that my background is actually in IT operations. I was formerly a director of IT infrastructure for a large software company. And I would have been annoyed if software I installed chose to remove itself from my I/O path without my consent. So to that extent, at the end of your 30 days, the software continues to accelerate. You simply lose access to the management console's metrics. So when you come into the management console at the end of 30 days, it says, hey, your trial's expired. Please enter a license key or click remove Infinio. And we give you the button, single click. 5 minutes later, everything is cleaned up.
Wow. And I guess, and this is all based on the 40 meg download you said. And so like, it's pretty quick and easy to make it run. And
exactly.
So do you need to custom, you know, I was going to ask you if you needed to, you know, so you talk about, you know, you reserve 8 gigs of memory and one vCPU. Do you need, like, is there options to give it more? Is that something that people that's necessary or?
So today we haven't seen the need to increase the cache size. There are unquestionably a need in the future. As the memory footprint of hosts increases, that means the VM density will increase, which means it puts added pressure onto the cache. We see that coming, and we are building a solution as we speak to solve that.
What is there a specific configuration that is compatible with the quick install? I mean, do we have to have some sort of prerequisites in order to pull that off?
The only prerequisite we have, so I should point out that our next release, which is coming, let's say, within the next 30 days, will include support for vSphere distributed switches, as well as a fully diskless installation. And what I mean by diskless is you could have a Blade chassis that does boot from SAN or compact flash-based boots where you don't have a local data store. And we fully support those environments. You could be using a diskless setup like auto-deploy alongside vSphere distributed switches with host profiles. Won't be a problem. Today, the requirement is that you have a local disk and that you're using vSphere standard switches. So, like I said, within 30 days, those requirements will be completely eliminated from our product.
Can I just say how awesome it is to talk to product managers who are like, with our updated version, which is going to be available in, let's call it 30 days.
Right. Well, not sometime between Q3 and Q4.
But also, it's like, let's call it 30 days. Well, is it 30 days? Is it not? We'll say it's 30 days. When it was 60 days, that's what we call 30 days.
Yeah, so we're on a rapid release cycle. We try to push out a release every month. And the release might not have major features. A lot of organizations will hold back features so that they can make a large marketing splash. My prerogative on it is a little bit different. I feel like our existing customers who can get benefit from features will take advantage of them early on. But the broader community who's still evaluating their edge caching strategy, they'll hear about it when they're evaluating it. They'll hear the marketing message when it's time for them to do the evaluation. We aren't a VMware scale company yet, so we don't need to make these grand sort of release announcements. So I'd rather get capabilities in the hands of our customers when they're available so that they can get benefit instead of sort of holding it back.
Do you guys talk about customers, like numbers of customers and how your customers are using stuff?
We have double-digit customers in six industries, everything from financial services to, in fact, a massive bank, as well as a critical life system that's used for, I can't really give specifics, but it's basically used for critical care. So that speaks to the resilience of the software, the sort of vetting that it's gone through to be appropriate for that sort of scenario. As well as mining operations, retailing, all sorts of different industries, software development. So I think a point that's worth raising here is that in around 25% of our installs, the use case is VDI, spanning industries. The others are general workloads. So our solution for VDI, it's not just about solving the boot storm or the login storm or the coordinated event like virus scanning or otherwise. It's not just about solving those problems. It's about the ongoing I/O requirements of those VMs, being able to reduce those to reduce the burden on storage so that you can buy less storage so that you can meet the economic goals of your VDI install.
Well, and I imagine one of the critical things that your software would enable is for people to use persistent VDI with just using regular sort of NFS storage.
Absolutely. So as far as persistent VDI, if you're willing to put us, like many of our customers have, if you're willing to put us under your Oracle Rack install or your MS SQL databases, I see no reason why, much like our 25% of our customers do, they put us in their VDI environments, all of which are persistent VDI.
So that's so you don't get the benefit of storage capacity reduction with this. It's purely a performance gain, but especially with persistent VDI, since so many of the blocks are identical from desktop to desktop to desktop, you can really put this on like super old slow NFS, I would imagine.
Oh,
right?
Oh yeah, you can put it on whatever you want as long as it's NFS v3 support, which is all VMware supports. And I think, as far as your point about deduplication at the persistence tier is concerned, when we look at the landscape of NFS based storage systems, NetApp clearly dominates. They have a very, very good solution, ASIS. It's granted, it's post-processing deduplication, but it's still, for a VDI environment, like deduplicating persistent VDI OS images and whatnot, it's very effective. It's just not an effective reducer of cache space need.
Yeah, for performance.
Exactly. So my prerogative is, why would we recreate the wheel? There are other solutions that use like virtual data stores for acceleration. And what they do is they block a lot of the underlying capabilities of the storage system, like snapshots, deduplication, cloning, all that stuff. And they re-implement it in their own software stack out of necessity. And my prerogative is, you already bought best of class capabilities from these storage vendors. Why would you replace them with something unnecessarily? Our solution lets you continue using all of those best of breed features, writable snapshots.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because like NetApp, you could argue that NetApp is, sure, called the best in the world amongst, able to crawl your users' illegal MP3 files all weekend long. Yes. And consolidate them down. And so, and it doesn't do shit for performance when it comes to, your VDI environment, but yeah, let it do that all night.
So why would you rebuy that solution, that deduplication solution from some third party performance optimization company, just because it's a necessary feature based on their sort of insertion approach? Yeah. It just doesn't add up. I don't want to rebuy capabilities I already own, especially when I already own the best one that's available. So we're transparent. We allow full VAAI interoperability with the underlying storage system.
Oh, and interesting. Yeah, passing it through. Yeah, because it wouldn't. Yeah,
exactly. We don't need to know anything about VAAI. We pass it through to the underlying storage, so you get all of those great features that are available through those primitives.
And regardless of what happens, if the underlying storage says, "Yeah, your clones are done. Here we go, and here's the blocks," then you'll see the blocks and recognize
exactly.
They're the same. Or yeah,
precisely.
What do you what's the cheapest NFS storage out there? Is it like Drobo? Does Drobo have something like Drobo has NFS, cheap. Right? Yeah,
I don't know if they do. I had a Drobo way back in the day, but I never used.
Are you on Justin? What's our Drobo? Is it a NAS or is that just plugged into your computer? Justin, it might just be SMB. Yeah.
I would say that the cheapest NFS storage is build your own, right? You buy some commodity rack mount system and throw Linux or FreeBSD on it. Maybe use Linux HA for some failover, and a shared global file system underneath, and you've got a fairly viable solution. And of course, there are other solutions, Nexenta and otherwise, where it's open source software at its core, yeah. and can download it and use it. And quite frankly, we have customers that do that, and they need help on performance just because they aren't buying something that's been sort of assembled by a, you know, world-class storage company. It's just sort of like commodity components slapped together. And they run into some problems on the performance side, but at the end of the day, they get the space they need, and combined with Infinio, it's at a price they can afford.
And that's interesting, too, because it is not, in these cases, like, it's not necessarily Infinio versus storage vendor X.
Oh, no, no, no.
It could be. It could be, but it's not always the case. Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of companies, they sell alongside us because it gives their total solution an edge. You know, when they're facing competition from block storage, they come to the market, come to the table with their solution plus Infinio, and it really helps differentiate them.
So it would be fun to do a project, though. That'd be like a great video of finding... like Gabe, like we go to Weird Stuff Warehouse and find like the oldest NAS we can that supports NFS v3, and just like let's see how many users
that would be awesome
we can run off the shittiest NAS. Yeah. All right, we'll talk to our sales rep. And let's.
Yeah, we always need a reason to go down to Weird Stuff.
Yeah,
that would be a great exercise.
So going back to the writes. So I get that you know you're not touching the content on disk. So when a write goes through, you know you might look at what that block is to see if you need to cache it or just make an updated reference to your cache or whatever. But fundamentally, you know you're just letting it go through to the actual NFS system and the speed to confirm that write transaction. I assume you're waiting for the NFS protocol to say that that transaction is confirmed before your sort of marking it confirmed in your mind, right?
In our mind.
Yeah.
So we what we do is we do wait for that synchronous response from the storage system to say this is protected. We commit it to our system and respond back to the host. That way, we're not responsible for sort of protecting any of your writes. The storage system is always in control of your writes. It's always protected. We're simply an observer from a write perspective. We don't mangle, touch, or torment any of your writes in any way.
So that is, so it's a read cache would be the
yep,
sort of correct,
exactly.
Yeah,
a distributed content-based read cache at the edge. And as a result of, you know, all of the approaches we've discussed previously, we can achieve some phenomenal offload rates with very little memory. I think you would agree that 8 gigabytes of memory is fairly meager. Mm-hmm. So with that, we can offload, you know, a meaningful percentage of the IO going to storage. And as a result, if you can offload 65, 70, 75, 80% of your read IOPS, you know, that's freeing up spindles.
In other words, you're saving space. Like, writes still have to go to disk, and we have to wait for that to be confirmed. But you're taking so much read off of that path that it's got extra room to handle these writes.
Precisely. And I wish this were sort of a video discussion, because I've got a great vCenter screenshot that demonstrates that, where it gives you the overview on a per VM basis of read versus write IOPS. And you can just see that at the moment Infinio installs, there's this massive cliff where the IOPS numbers going to backend storage just plummet. And as a result, what I should say is that the IOP numbers for reads, they actually increase by around 100 per second, but it represents around 80% offload. And as a result, you can do more write operations in the same amount of time.
Yeah.
So while it doesn't directly accelerate writes doing like, write back or any sort of deferral mechanism, it certainly benefits writes.
Well, send us that. Is it a screenshot or video or whatever? Yeah. Send us that and we'll post it into the show notes, because we'll make this... for people who are not listening live, it'll be an MP3 posted a few minutes after we're done here. So let's talk about encryption. And, obviously if you're, I don't know, like encryption seems like it makes things complex. And the the reason I mention that is because I'm starting to have more conversations with storage vendors around encryption, specifically around like multi-tenancy. And now like ones that are doing different kind of cloud provider and DAS provider type stuff. So they have to think about encryption and they want to ensure that, you know, one customer can't hit another customer's data no matter what and that kind of thing. How does the encryption conversation happen with Infinio?
So I haven't actually run into a customer that's using guest OS based encryption, either in VDI or in server workloads yet. What I have run into is organizations that are using more or less RAID group based or volume based encryption. So NetApp customers, this is something that you find, right? But that's happening below us. That happens below the NFS call.
Because that prevents someone from taking the hard drive, like physically removing the hard drive.
Yeah,
It's
protecting for disposition of assets. When you're talking about sort of replacing a storage array, where do those drives go? Do they go and get recycled, reused, shredded, or otherwise? And to what extent can an organization with varying levels of sophistication reconstruct data? And drive-based encryption protects against that. Now, that's very different than at-rest encryption for a live active data store. So if you really need to prevent access to content that's been written to disk with an online storage system, then you're talking about an encryption mechanism at the OS level or at the application level. Now, in both cases, that means that the content that passes through the underlying storage is highly entropic. There's so much entropy in it that you can't make heads nor tails of what the actual content is.
Yeah, hopefully.
And that would unequivocally disrupt any content-based caching system. Now, what that doesn't do is prevent you from optimizing reads. Because think of it this way. You might write content to an underlying storage system. And at the 4K block level, each of those 4K blocks is encrypted. So the content is completely mangled. But if you read that content multiple times, well, it doesn't change the format of the encryption on disk after reads. It simply wrote it in encrypted form. So it's still reading the block from disk, and there's consistency in the block's content. So the difference would be that the content-based nature of deduplication would be put at risk by in OS or sort of VM-level encryption, but it would not prevent cacheability of content.
That is a very science answer. Like, that's a product management answer. This is put at risk, but like, so wait, in lay terms, you don't get the deduping, but you still get the
cache
performance on a single block.
You don't get the deduping, but you get the caching.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So are you so right now everything you've been talking about is for ESX. Is your model, does it work for, like, is it extensible that it could work for like a Hyper-V or KVM or something like that, or do you have plans for those?
So it could easily work for any NFS based storage. Hyper-V does not officially support NFS. They're either block or SIFS. My understanding is that some organizations have been tempted by NFS and use Unix services for Windows, I guess that's what it used to be called, to get NFS access. And it doesn't stop you from doing so. Now, as far as our ability to accelerate it, well, it wouldn't be automated. And I think that's really core to our company's philosophy, is reducing the administrative burden of our software to keep the total cost of ownership low. And it would concern me to deploy our software into an environment where it's a fully manual install. So I don't think we would support it today, but it's certainly a top-of-mind question. Should we be supporting Hyper-V and KVM, particularly in the VDI space? I mean, Hyper-V shows great promise.
Yeah, it's interesting there's a lot of people who just simply don't want to pay for VMware for their desktops, and especially in, you know, like Citrix environments. And so I know there seems like there was a lot of Zen Server being used for VDI in the years past, and it seems to have flipped over to Hyper-V now. But I'm not a hypervisor guy. I didn't know Hyper-V didn't support NFS, so I could imagine that would be a kind of a, I mean, even if you have to sort of do it in a circuitous workaround sort of way, that seems like, yeah, now you're just getting a little bit kind of weird, and then your solution doesn't work well. And
I'd rather come to market with a strong Hyper-V or KVM based solution instead of sort of hacking what we currently have into an environment. Because, you know, I think the quality of our software is what makes Infinio great, and compromising that is really, it's putting at jeopardy the company's, you know, integrity.
So what's next for you guys? You mentioned that you are, you know, sort of like a rapid release pace. And so when you look out in the next, you know, few releases or sort of product direction, company direction, where do you see that going?
So I have to be a little cautious just about releasing sort of information. I like to release product early and often. I don't like necessarily sharing the details of our roadmap.
I release product early and often, not information.
Yeah, so what I can tell you is that we've had a lot of success in the NFS space, and we think the broader market would enjoy this from a block perspective, from a workload perspective. Specialization is really what I'm talking about. And yeah, so I think you can look to see from us broader application of our solution to platforms, protocols, and workloads.
Man, you're like a Fed chairman trying to parse what that means.
I'll put it more concretely then. You can expect block support from us. We'll continue to focus on VDI as a core discipline of Infinio, making sure that the features that we release are optimized around the challenges of a VDI administrator, and furthermore focusing on reducing the economic burden of storage for VDI deployments. Because really, if you look at the large thrust of VDI adoption, there's the cost per desktop, there's the simplified management security position of VDI relative to desktops in the field. And I would say the leading challenge for VDI people is the economics. And we fit in nicely there, but there are other problems to solve that we want to help address. So look to us to further solve the VDI problem and to broaden the platforms that you can deploy Infinio to.
So I like that second part, the VDI problem too. I feel like, you know, if we can just get, if you can remove storage performance from as a headache and enable persistent desktops to work with VDI, and you do it in a way that's non-disruptive and doesn't require, you know, special hardware and all that sort of stuff, I'll take that.
I wrote an article, I think it was even before I had the initial call with you, Peter, that you know, there's so many solutions out there now. There's almost no excuse to not have some sort of VDI storage solution. Now they all work differently, and they all have different combinations. And you know, if you adjust the sliders of write caching and read and performance, you can pretty much tailor a solution to your specific needs. But yeah, I mean, this is anything that can be done for the VDI use cases is awesome.
Yeah, we agree. Definitely.
So what happens next? Like, how are you a company that's by yourself? I don't know. I guess, you know, clearly startup companies like the ideas of people buying them for lots of money. I hope if that happens, you go to someone like who's good. Please don't be bought by IBM and just disappear.
So as far as the acquisition and future of the company, you know, you probably hear this often, but we're in a very strong position to be a standalone company, to extend our solution into the broader storage industry, not just edge caching or whatnot. There's tons of optimization. So just to give you an analogy, if you look at WAN acceleration, WAN acceleration started as the WAN acceleration play. It was a feature, right? And now it's more broad. It's more in a WAN optimization platform. They sort of started with this kernel, which had a lot of value, acceleration, pure play acceleration. And now they've extended it to, host-based acceleration for VDI connected VPN connected clients. You know, they brought in the solution. Load balancing is another example where, it used to be just sort of like silly round robin load balancing. And then the sophistication came about where now it's really about this application delivery platform. It's got a million and one different approaches that are custom tailored to your needs for doing application delivery. And I think you can look at the server-side caching market very similarly. We're starting out with the acceleration-only message because that's really what is so valuable about this platform. But there are so many other opportunities here to further optimize storage. I mean, you touched on one, which was about deduplication, right? So today, post-process deduplication. Well, I think a lot of organizations would really cherish having real-time inline deduplication persistent to disk. Well, that's an opportunity, right? That's an opportunity to extend our platform and to really deliver more value to customers. So, you know, I think you can look to us to be, at the very least, investigating these sorts of things.
You know, as you're talking, it sort of occurs to me that there are, so if you look at the OSI stack for networking, they're, you know, like load balancers and stuff like that started sort of lower level, and even round robin was like, you know, IP load balancing, and they worked their way up the stack, and now we have, you know, layer 7 load balancers with sort of application level intelligence and that kind of stuff. And I don't know how the NFS protocol works, but I imagine the world of storage has like some kind of equivalent to their version of the OSI model. And
yeah, sure. Yeah, as you unwrap storage requests, eventually you're going to get up into OS specific or even application specific IO patterns. And is there application specific intelligence that can further optimize for MS SQL? In fact, you know, to carry on the WAN optimization analogy, that's precisely what companies like Riverbed and otherwise have done. They make application-specific optimizations. They've come out with WAN-based NFS and SIFS optimizations, Exchange plugins, all sorts of different stuff. And I think you can look at the edge caching market in much the same way. I don't see why that isn't a logical progression.
Like, and you can do as much amazing stuff right now completely outside by looking just at blocks as they go by. But then if you also had and this is like some of our storage vendors do now, you know, you could have like hints or something like that, or an agent, you know, inside a VM that would be able to indicate more like what kind of...
Yeah, what's your intent,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
As opposed to simply a request and fulfilling a request, which, and I'm definitely trivializing and simplifying it, but if instead you understood sort of what's coming next, well, guess what? The Linux kernel has a hinting framework that's designed specifically to do that. It hints at what is about to come, not just what the current request is. There's all sorts of intelligence that we can gather to further the solutions for application-specific acceleration or otherwise, or even just optimization of the cache.
You know, and then you can also see as we're looking at the future and as something like a content-based read cache at the edge, is that right? As that gets smarter and more application aware and use case aware, you can also sort of see that, you know, as data center computing is evolving and we're moving towards, I don't know if you look at like open compute and that kind of stuff, where we have, you know, pools of compute, pools of GPU, pools of storage, and they all sort of work together with software to, you know, like have cache that goes across multiple machines and workloads that go across multiple machines and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you can really see that you know, we get to a point where sort of like all storage is sort of multi-host cached. Yeah. And we don't think about, like, NTFS has a really fantastic built-in caching mechanism that no one thinks about because it's like inside every Windows computer and it's like at the driver level and it's just on its own, we don't really think about it. But imagine like if that sort of level of cache is kind of built into our, you know, multi-host, multi-VM pools, it becomes really interesting. Like what we can.
It is. It's very interesting. And, you know, at our core, Infinio is a distributed computing company. We're applying that technology to a storage problem. But, you know, you could let your mind go crazy and, you know, there you could seed WAN accelerators. If you understood how applications behave, you could sort of preemptively push content where it needs to be based on what you know of the application's behavior and whatnot. And these are all possibilities. You know, I think the what we're offering today is sort of taking dumb caching and making it smart. A lot of the competitive solutions, they're just bit buckets, right? Oh, I need an address. Oh, I happen to have the address. Here it is. Infinio is taking that first step towards really making it an application-aware cache, looking at the content generated by the applications, positioning it sort of strategically to amortize the cost of cache fetches across your cluster so you don't get hotspots, stuff like that. Automatically responding to environmental changes. When you lose a host, our cache responds. When you put a host into maintenance mode, we automatically remove ourselves and put ourselves back in once you come out of maintenance mode without any administrative intervention. The smarts of our software from a distributed computing perspective is what makes us so unique. And I think, you know, without sounding like the Fed chairman, you can just look at us to continue pushing that forward because it is our specialization. It's what makes us Infinio.
How, as Infinio, so you talked about, you know, your next version in 30 days and then you're iterating rapidly. Going backwards, I mean, how long have you had a product that's been on the market and what have you seen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, great question. So we brought all of this to market November of 2013. So we're just outside of our first quarter of selling.
Wow.
And, you know, like I said, we're already in critical support for critical life applications, you know, banks and all sorts of stuff. So really, really high-end sort of critical workloads. And, you know, they're really enjoying what we're offering. And obviously, we hope to bring it to more people.
So to that end, so next steps for listeners who want to, you know, sort of check this out. We already discussed that, you know, there's an easy six clicks to happiness during lunch. And so they go to Infinio.com and then what?
Yeah. So if you go to Infinio.com and you click the, one of the banners that says, it's not actually a banner, it's a button, big green button. What you do is you just give us your name, email address, and phone number. And today, what we do is a salesperson will be in contact and basically just send you a download link. The download link is for you to do on your own. You can download it, double-click the software, go through the installation process, and you'll be up and running in under 30 minutes.
And then, as you said, that's it. Well, I guess, you know, if you're just joining us now, click rewind, listen to the first 59 minutes of the conversation for the details, but it just sits there. It works. It's doing its thing. I imagine, you know, you talked about the you know, you've got reporting in your management console to sort of show what it's doing. Although I guess really,
in fact, what we show you is, we show you three key, performance metrics, which are the response time improvement. And that's measured by observed latency. We actually measure the latency of cache hits and cache misses, and we'll show you what the latency of the blended, basically what your application sees, which is the average of cache misses plus cache hits. And then we compare that against cache misses alone. So in effect, what that's showing you is this is the latencies that your applications enjoy, and this is the latency of your storage system on its own. And we tell you what the difference is there so that you can see when you get a, you know, 3x multiple improvement on latency. Then we show you the percentage offload alongside the number of IOPS that represents, as well as the bandwidth saving on your network or your storage controller as a result of the offload. And of course, you get all of the historical graphs you would expect. And it's presented in a very, I would call it, artful UI that is really just a joy to work with. So I definitely encourage you to check it out. The
management console is a joy to work with.
No, you got to see this thing.
Did we get into the cost? We talked about how it was licensed, but did we actually get a per socket cost? I think we postponed that conversation. So,
the per socket cost is $499 a socket.
That seems a lot cheaper. Now this sounds like a sham. This is not. I didn't know how much it costs, but I was going to I would have expected thousands of dollars. Rewind. I can't say this without sounding like an
idiot. Here's a shovel. You sound like an infomercial guy now.
$4.99. What?
That includes like your
Steve Ballmer.
All right. Sorry, Peter
Except
Smith.
In Nebraska.
So Gabe and I are just on our own little planet right now. Peter, you were trying to say something that is actually relevant. What was it?
Yeah, so it's $499 per socket, including the first year of maintenance.
All right, so that's awesome. I mean, and you know, on the management console and looking at the reports and everything, it's almost like.
Do you have screenshots right there?
What?
Do you have screenshots in front of you?
No, I'm looking at my notes.
Let me just backtrack and say the reason I say it's a joy to work with, and I know this sounds corny, but
dude, it's your baby. Reason, you're allowed to be corny with it. That's fine.
The reason I think it's interesting is because I don't know of any other platform that the administrative toll for using the solution is pushing one button. Once you install our software and you get a second data store that you want to accelerate, you set up the data store, it's running some workload, and you say, you know what, I want to make it Infiniized, right? You click one button. It's a blue button. It says accelerate. You click that, and it takes care of every detail. It puts us into the IO path, and it starts optimizing it. I'm not aware of a single solution where you can just click one button and get that much value.
Can you make it so that when you click accelerate, all the pixels on the screen, like when they in Star Trek or Star Wars, when they go to warp speed, like it goes.
Now you're getting into the Citrix Dazzle experience.
I think we should definitely do that.
Yeah, good recommendation, blogger with no actual customers or budget. Way to go.
Yeah, so, it's officially on the product backlog.
So. And the best, I mean, at the end of the day, really, you know, if you've got a VDI project, you don't need graphs, you don't need charts. You've got, you know, go to your help desk, just pop this thing in, and just look what happens to your users and look what happens to your sessions. And I think that, you know, its value will make itself known regardless of whether, you know, what the data show.
Yeah. I think you'll be able to feel the difference. One of our first customers, they sort of give us this anecdote, which was basically they installed Infinio and people came up to the VP of IT and said, oh, what did you do to make things faster? And they wanted to see if they could attribute it to Infinio. So they went out and they clicked the disable button to remove us. And people stopped them in the hallway and said, hey, what did you do to make things slower again?
Whoa.
So it's the kind of acceleration and the kind of offload for a storage system that the users will actually feel the difference, which I think is, you know, a testament to how much benefit it offloads, because, you know, users don't typically feel a difference in their workload unless it's pretty pronounced.
Yeah, like you feel a difference on the negative side, but on the increase of speed, that's something that would have to be pretty substantial for people to notice.
Yep.
So, cool.
It's worth noting that along with being installed in six industries and a bunch of accounts, we were actually recognized at VMworld for being a finalist for the Best of VMworld new product or new technology.
Yeah, and those judges are intense. So I guess, you know, that's all I have. I don't know, Peter, if you have any sort of final thoughts you'd like to share with everyone.
Just come to our site. We'd love to show you what we can offer, and I think you'll be pleased.
All right. So that's Peter Smith, Director of Product Management for Infinio. Peter, again, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you.
Gabe, thanks for joining as well.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. It's been fun.
And to all of you who listen, thank you so much for your time. Thanks to Infinio for sponsoring today's podcast. And good luck to all you with your VDI projects. And good luck to you, Peter and Infinio, with your products. So from San Francisco, this is Brian Madden. Thanks a lot.